It's to the best of our knowledge, I'm Anne Strainchamps. In case you forgot, you live in a body. You were born into the world in this vessel made of skin and hair, and then somewhere along the way, you became conscious of it. Maybe even self-conscious.
Everyone has their own sort of body image journey. Can you walk me through your journey?
Yeah. So I would say that I started objectifying myself very young.
Stay beautiful. Natural beauty. Clear that.
This is hair color magic. That morning fresh makeup.
This is Jessie Neeland, author of Body Neutral.
Other people were objectifying me as soon as I hit puberty. And so I started to learn that my value was very much based on my appearance. The most interesting and important thing about me was looking hot. And so I cared a lot about how I looked, and I went through a lot of labor to meet conventional beauty ideals, and I cared very much when I didn't. That was just normal. That was just what I thought. Girls and women are supposed to think this way or whatever. Later, I worked in the fitness industry in New York City as a personal trainer. I was training like Victoria's Secret models and actresses and some of the most conventionally beautiful people in the world. And they were all having the same kind of struggles and thoughts and feelings and everything that everybody else did. So I realized, well, clearly, the key to happiness or whatever it is that we've been taught looking a certain way is going to offer you, it doesn't work. At the time, body positivity had just become very popular, but I didn't love all of the talk around, you should just love how you look.
Stay beautiful.
Just felt really unrealistic for a lot of people. It completely erased people in marginalized bodies. It was very much for like thin white women or fat white women with an hourglass body or conventionally attractive with like one little flaw. There was a lot of that messaging that just didn't sit right. So eventually I discovered the term body neutrality and oh yeah, this is the work I'm doing with clients. This is the work that I was doing for myself.
Body you always
own. Maybe you've heard about the body positivity movement and the importance of learning to love your body. But you know, there might be something even better to strive for instead, like body neutrality. Producer Angela Bautista wanted to know more.
To start off, what is body neutrality?
So, body neutrality, as I define it, is the process or ability to strip away all of the added meaning and significance and moral judgment and all of the interpretation and everything from your body or your appearance. So you can just see it for what it is, which is neutral, morally neutral. You can have a reaction to it. You can have a preference. You can have a feeling about it, but it doesn't have power over you the way that people who are struggling with body image issues often feel like their body or appearance has a lot of power over them.
I love chill goals. I think we need more chill, achievable goals.
I agree.
You know, with all the distress and anxiety around body image, we hear a lot about body positivity, loving your body, everybody's beautiful, everybody's perfect the way it is, your body's a temple. These don't sound like bad messages, but are there negatives to body positivity?
Absolutely. So the body positivity movement started as a socio-political movement. It was intended, it's rooted in the fat activism of the 60s. It was always intended to fight for the rights and dignity of people in marginalized bodies, and in particular, people in fat bodies. And that would be things like changing policy and anti-fat discrimination and protecting people in marginalized bodies. I'm all for that. That fight is still happening. You know, there are still social justice issues at play, but it kind of went mainstream, especially in the social media space, like over a decade ago. And at that time, the message switched pretty dramatically from we need to protect people in marginalized bodies to everybody should overcome whatever issues they have and love themselves unconditionally. And there isn't anything innately wrong with that idea, except for the fact that, A, it totally took a socio-political message and made it a personal problem. You know, it's like the pull yourself up by your bootstraps idea around body image. Like, I should just not care if people are discriminating against me. But it also just, it doesn't feel realistic for most people. And so in that way, it often just breeds more shame and feelings of failure. So, you know, it's like another unrealistic standard for a lot of people. And I just can't really support anything that's going to make you feel worse about yourself, even if it was intended to make you feel better about yourself. So if you can love your body unconditionally and just feel amazing about it all the time, that's awesome. I have nothing against that. But most people can't. And so I think setting that as like the gold standard just makes a lot of people feel like they're failing on a whole new front. Not only do they not look the way they want, but they also don't accept themselves enough or love themselves enough.
And that distress can come in many forms. I'm not always like, oh, woe is me about my body.
Right.
But maybe it's just a little feeling or a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. You write that all body image issues are built upon these moral and social hierarchies that we have about our bodies. Can you give an example of how these hierarchies play out?
Oh, yeah. So like the most classic one would be conventional beauty and body ideals. They're very distinct and binary, very much around masculinity and femininity. I mean, we could just talk about that like as one hierarchy, but honestly, that's a million if you really break it down. So what happens a lot of times is people don't just suffer over one hierarchy, right? They're not like, oh, I just don't fit the ideal. They're like, I don't fit the ideal in these 25 ways. My hair isn't the right way. My shoulders are the wrong shape. My belly is too big. We go through and there's all these little hierarchies built into each one. And that's what causes the suffering. I've had a woman who couldn't get pregnant or couldn't stay pregnant. And so her body image wasn't necessarily, she didn't like think, oh, my uterus is ugly, right? But she just hated her body because there was this feeling that it was being bad, that it was broken or wrong. And so she ended up hating how her body looked because that was what's accessible in the mirror. You can't see your uterus. So she ended up with all of these body image issues that really came down to a hierarchy, which is like, I'm not woman enough.
There's a chapter in your book where you explore the one big lie that every single person with body image issues, which is everyone, the big lie that everyone believes. What is the big lie?
So the big lie is that your body is your problem, that your source of suffering is your body or your appearance. And you literally cannot have body image issues if at least some part of you does not believe that lie. Because it's kind of like this red herring or ruse. The purpose of trying to look a certain way is to, let's say, meet an emotional need. Let's say you are lonely and want more deeper connections. And so you're like, okay, if only I could look a certain way, I would get that need for connection met. It doesn't work if you don't believe that the reason you don't have connection is because you don't look good enough.
Mm.
So part of the job of body neutrality is to start poking holes in that by encouraging you to go get those needs met in the body you have now. And all of a sudden the ruse starts to crumble and you're like, oh, I see. Because again, it's not very useful to be like, but that's impossible. You can't get that. Stop wanting that. But what is effective is learning how to dismantle that belief system by taking action and seeing it be disproven.
You know, when you say it out loud, when you spell out the big lie for people, it almost seems a little obvious.
Yeah.
Like, duh, this is the problem. But why is it that people believe in the lie? Or how is the lie made invisible?
Oh, so there are so many reasons. Part of it is just the culture that we live in is basically upheld by the scaffolding of various systems of oppression that are all, their whole goal is to keep you from noticing this lie, right? Like if we go back in the history of our country, we've got slavery and things where it was extremely important that we say some bodies are better than others so that we could uphold a system to economically advantage white people and exploit Black people. So there was a lie right there that your body is the reason this is happening. that it is your body's fault that you are in this position, essentially, or that there was some meaning associated with the different bodies. And that's true in every way when it comes to sex and gender or gender expression, age, weight, race. Like, there are so many ways that we are told certain things about a person's body or appearance makes them more or less worthy of specific kinds of lives or treatment or whatever. So it would implode society, basically, for everyone to see this lie, which is why I consider body neutrality work to be social justice liberation work. Because if everyone actually started unpacking these and going, huh, if it's not my body, then what is it? They will immediately see the hierarchies for what they are and the systems of oppression.
But instead, I think what we're presented with is the option of, well, what's easier? Thinking the problem is my body and fixing it myself, or trying to dismantle this big foundational lie on which a lot of society is built upon.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that it's so effective too. We don't like to feel helpless. So there is a very valid reason to blame yourself and your body for bad things that happen to you, because it almost gives you hope. Well, if only I could change my body, then bad things wouldn't happen to me anymore. It doesn't work. So listen, if someone cheated on Beyonce, I think we can like safely assume that nobody's, you know, like nobody gets through this life without problems, right? Like if you imagine that your partner would never cheat on you if only you looked a certain way, that is not a guarantee. So there's a lot of stuff that we kind of take on and it almost feels like empowerment, even though it totally tortures us. Well, if I make this my problem and it's something I can change, then all I have to do is change it. If you're like, oh, it's society's problem and I'm just going to have to face discrimination for this thing and live in fear of bad things happening, that's a lot bigger of a task. And it overwhelms people and it makes them feel really out of control. So yeah, that's a huge reason that we hold on to this story too.
Is there a particular story that you have with a client that kind of helps to illustrate what the body neutrality journey looks like?
Yeah, God, so many. I will tell a bit of an amalgam because I think this story is so, so common. And I've had many clients go through something very similar. So a client who is really, really negative associations with their body, they look in the mirror and they feel disappointed or they feel panicky or they're dieting all the time and tracking and trying to control their weight. What we do together is to get to understand what the point, the like underlying, usually subconscious purpose of being a certain way is. And there's some obvious stuff, like the more superficial level of it is because I want to fit society's ideals and I don't want anybody to judge me. But there's always, if you go digging down deep enough, there's always something else. There's some other association, unmet emotional need, some problem that you're hoping will be magically solved if you're at a certain weight. It's always a bad plan, I will say that. So with somebody in the weight example, a lot of times what would happen is we would identify what they're actually looking for, which might be a feeling of belonging and the ability to be their authentic selves and have that witnessed and appreciated and all that. And then we start go-getting that at the weight they're at so that eventually their weight just doesn't matter. It's a non-issue because they're getting their needs met, that the weight loss was sort of vaguely subconsciously supposed to be getting met. And with that shift, once you actually solve the underlying problem or meet the underlying need or whatever it might be, again, it's not like you look in the mirror and go, I love this body now. You just kind of go, oh, like this isn't how I would necessarily prefer to be, but then you move on and it doesn't torment you all day. It doesn't take up so much mental space. It doesn't impact your mood or your sense of worth. So that would be a really common journey to the body neutrality kind of work that I do.
I want to go back to talking about gender. There's been a lot of focus on transgender people in mainstream news and in legislatures across the country, legislating which bodies are allowed in which bathrooms or what people are allowed to do with their bodies. What can body neutrality bring to the conversation?
Well, I guess I'll put it this way. I believe, and when I wrote the book, I intended for the way that I talk about body neutrality to apply to everyone. First of all, everyone has complete bodily autonomy and agency, and no one else should be commenting on or judging what they do with their own bodies or appearance. There's just no need for that, which also means that there's no body neutral actions. So sometimes a person will say, is it okay if I get Botox or am I being like not body neutral? And I'm like, nope, it is absolutely possible to do literally any decision from a place of body neutrality if you are doing it without the added meaning and significance that says I will be more worthy of such and such on the other side.
I can see this playing out in someone's mind, someone listening to this that may have some sort of thoughts about trans people and thinking that trans people have the wrong body and therefore they should just accept their body as it is, which sounds like body positivity or neutrality. But again, when you dig deeper, that is based on a moral hierarchy of thinking that cis bodies are worth more than trans bodies and trans bodies should not exist.
Yeah. We already do all kinds of gender affirming procedures and different things like that. I mean, a boob job is a gender affirming procedure. If a woman gets it, she wants to usually something in the space of feel more feminine or feel more womanly or whatever. So the fact that anyone could ever possibly freaking care that someone who doesn't identify that way gets it, or it's gender affirming something that doesn't make sense to them, total nonsense to me. But also it's about alignment with your inner self, right? If you think about it that way, like if somebody is moving towards a gender identity expression that aligns with their inner self, they're going to thrive and it's going to be awesome. We should be supporting and encouraging that. And anyone who feels like the thing that I am deep down is unwelcome is going to suffer mental health issues. They're going to just, it's going to be a really, really hard time. So gender is no different than that. Wear polka dots, get a boob job, whatever you want. But like most people are going to really be able to step into the most healthy, happy, and expansive version of themselves when they are allowed to tell their truth.
So you identify as queer and non-binary. I was just curious as to how body neutrality figures into these identities for you.
Whew. So I don't think that I would know I was queer and non-binary if it weren't for body neutrality. That's what I'll say. Because I, like most people raised as a girl and presumed to be a woman, we didn't have the language back then. I mean, the language of non-binary is very new. So when I was growing up, I just felt like something was wrong with me, sort of vaguely, you know, like I just wasn't the right way. I felt like I didn't belong in the categories that people kept putting me in, and I didn't have any language to identify it. But I will also say that for most of my younger life, I was so committed to the woman ideal that I probably never would have given myself permission to even consider the language and concepts that exist now because it would have cost me privilege. And so because of that, I didn't really let myself think too much about anything. The thought of giving up that privilege was terrifying. And it wasn't until I went through the body neutrality process and had been going through it for years and years when it was like, I basically learned that giving up that privilege really suited me, made me a better person, made me like a lot freer, made me more compassionate, like everything you can imagine. That's where I was able to start considering the new concepts and language around gender and sexuality. And I was like, okay, I can see how these apply to me and I'm going to claim them. And if somebody doesn't like that, I am now at peace with the fact that I have worth no matter what people think. So it doesn't feel as scary. And now I'm like so comfy. Granted, I still have an enormous amount of body privilege, but just having gone through the process of no longer wearing makeup, I shaved my head, I gained weight and stopped eating and exercising in a way that I learned in the fitness industry was ideal. All this stuff that I did, I was constantly unpacking my relationship to privilege and self-worth and all that stuff through the body neutrality process. So thank God. I mean, I get to be queer and non-binary, and those are like my favorite things about myself. So it is just the best.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you. This was great. This was fun.
Jesse Neeland, former fitness trainer turned body neutrality coach. Their new book is called Body Neutral, a revolutionary guide to overcoming body image issues. And that was producer Angelo Bautista talking.